Studio 360.
Hey, I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, sitting in for Kurt Anderson. On this week 25 years ago, the album Ready to Die by the notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, was released. Biggie was larger than life in every sense, 6'2", and nearly 400 pounds. He was also one of the great storytellers in hip-hop history. My own introduction to Biggie was getting the cassette tape of Ready to Die from my oldest brother when I was a kid here in Columbus, Ohio. I would listen to it in my Sony Walkman on the bus to school, and then on the playground during recess, and then under the cover staying up way later than I should have been. This story about Biggie's Ready to Die begins with one of its producers.
When I think of Notorious B.I.G., one of the first things that comes to my mind is the big, tall dude that had my Acura leaning over when we used to ride around and he used to freestyle in my car to my beats. I am Easy Mo B, DJ, Brooklyn native, and I was a music producer for Ready to Die.
I just started writing for The Source when somebody slipped me a copy of Ready to Die, and oh my God, it was an out-of-body experience, and I just had to talk to this guy.
As I grab the put it to your headpiece, one in the chamber, the safety is off, release straight at your dog homes. I wanna see cabbage, Biggie Small the Savage, doing your brain cells much damage. Teflon is the material for the imperial.
My name is Cheo Hodari Coker. I'm the author of Unbelievable, The Life, Death, and Afterlife from the Notorious B.I.G. I'm also the creator and former showrunner of Marvel's Luke Cage. But everything for me started as a hip-hop journalist, and one of the people that I had the opportunity to talk to extensively was the Notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Christopher Wallace, a.k.a. Biggie Smalls. We first met, I want to say, 2 weeks after Ready to Die came out, right in front of the stoop of 226 St. James in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, where he grew up. I just remember that first day when I met him. He's standing on his stoop. We're having a conversation, and every car that was passing is playing a different song from Ready to Die. I mean, he couldn't have planned it like that. I mean, that's just how ubiquitous the record was in New York, but also, I think, around the country. Already, you had this kid from Brooklyn who was immediately, like Athena full-born out of Zeus's head, already a deity, so to speak. Honestly, you almost have to liken it to a debut novel. When you read Claude Brown's Man-Child in the Promised Land, beyond telling his street stories and all the trouble that he got into before he eventually found himself and became a novelist, one big part of the book is the disconnect that he had with his parents' generation who just could not understand him. Biggie encompasses that entire book in one line.
Remember back in the days, our parents used to take care of us. Look at them now. They scared of us. Calling the city for help because they can't maintain. Dance done change.
With that song, Things Done Change, he's talking about the innocence of youth and the games that people would play as kids in the street. And then boom, flash forward to 93, people are getting killed. Either you're slaying crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot. He's writing a very political, very topical rhyme about urban despair.
Damn, what happened to the summertime cookouts? Every time I turn around, I'm getting took out. My mama got cancer in her breast. Don't ask me why I'm stressed. Things done change.
Ready to Die is actually supposed to be a story.
I'm Soumya Krishnamurthy. I'm a music journalist. When you listen to the album top to bottom, it's almost like you're watching a movie.
It goes from him being born.
Yeah! Yeah!
Superfly in the background, meaning that he was born in 72. By the time Rapper's Delight comes out, meaning by 79, you know, the family unit's broken up.
Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat.
Flash into the robbery scene on the train.
Get on the motherfucker! Don't move!
You're really seeing a coming-of-age story of this young man, Christopher Wallace, from his birth to his death and everything in between.
I got big plans. Big plans.
First of all, his process for writing is strange. The pen and the pad is laying there. but he's not really writing anything down. He did a lot of rocking back and forth, both hands clasped together and like circling, twiddling his thumbs. It's like, what is this dude doing?
He would describe just being on the corner selling drugs, and you're outside on your feet for hours, freezing, and you're basically trying to write, but you don't have time to actually have a notepad out and just writing stuff in your head.
In the session for Gimme the Loot, he did that, and he ordered food, and he had visitors. People was coming by to see him, and I was like, I want this guy to work. Like, what is going on? And then hours later, then he just jumped up. He was like, all right, I'm ready. In my mind, I was like, you ready for what? Like, you sat around, we wasted hours all day. And he went in the booth and bong.
My man Imp left a in a at my crib. Turned himself in, he had to do a bid. A 1 to 3, he be home the end of 93. I'm ready to get this paper, G. You with me? Right? My pockets looking kind of tight. And I'm stressed. Yo, Biggie, let me get the vest. No need for that. Just grab the...
When he was doing what he was doing, creating the two characters, one with the higher voice, one with a lower voice, and them answering each other, call and answer, that was creative, you know? I mean, a lot of thought. He was putting a lot of thought into what he was doing.
Word to mother, I'm dangerous. Crazier than a bag of angel dust. When I bust my... mother... take dirt naps, I'm all that, and a dime sack. Where the paper at?
When you listen to Biggie do it, it sounds like it's somebody else.
Give me the loop, give me the loop.
Just shows you just how clever he is.
And then when he came out of the booth, he like kind of looked at me through a side eye. He said, I told you. And I was sitting, and I was giving him the side eye, just looking at him like, wow, look at this dude.
I listen to a beat, I go in, and I just spit it off the dome, you know, essentially freestyle it. And the impact that that's had on subsequent generations is now every rapper wants to do that.
Who the hell is this? Paging me at 5:46 in the morning. Crack of dawn, and now I'm yawning. Wipe the cold out my eye. See who's this paging me and why.
Ready to Die was the first official full-length studio release from Bad Boy Records. It was really a brand new label put on the back of this young 23-year-old named Sean Puffy Combs.
Puffy was incredibly smart about branding and about how to sell this album to the masses at large. And so Big's first singles were basic R&B records flipped with hip-hop edge. Juicy is based on the classic Entombe song, Juicy Fruit. The original track's funky as it is. It's soft, I mean, from hip-hop standpoint. It's just the last thing that you would ever expect a Timberland boots, Philly blunt smoking gangster rapper to be rapping over. But Puffy already knew that this pop single was gonna basically open all these doors in terms of radio play.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall.
Juicy's probably my least favorite Biggie song. But then at the same time, I definitely appreciate, from a storytelling standpoint, it's just got all these different hallmarks of pulling your fans in, that they're remembering their childhoods while listening to your record.
Juicy is such a hip-hop classic. It's almost this rite of passage. For you to be a fan of hip-hop, you have to be able to rap at least a few bars of Juicy.
I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, you know.
It's really this song that's about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, going from rags to riches. And we were able to see that happen for Biggie in real time. This guy who was discovered in the unsigned hype section of The Source to now becoming the face of the magazine.
I made the change from a common thief to up close and personal with Robin Leach. And I'm far from cheap. I smoke skunk with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me. Now they write letters because they miss me. I never thought it could happen. This rapping.
When Puffy talks about Bad Boy, it's not just a label, it's a cultural movement. Music, fashion, lifestyle. Puffy was able to kind of package this idea of ghetto fabulous. What did that mean for young people, especially people of color, to aspire towards wearing the hottest clothes, being in the coolest parties, really being cultural trendsetters? You see it especially in the music video for Big Papa.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes.
In my opinion, Big Papa was the precursor to the personality, the voice, this whole poise, everything that he would use on the next album.
What Puffy did with Big Papa was he leaned into the West Coast sound, because he already was saying to the West Coast, I have an East Coast artist, but I'm going to put him over a smooth kind of track that's going to play right into the hip-hop fans from Los Angeles and Oakland.
The big singles, Juicy, Big Papa, which are the party anthems, the fun songs, that's really what drew people in. But when you hit play on Ready to Die, it's a much darker piece of work.
And the bargain that both Big and Puff made with each other is that Puffy was always going to make those moves that were going to guarantee the largest possible audience. Big was always about, okay, that's all well and good, but I have to make songs for my true fan base.
I don't want to live no more. Sometimes I hear death knocking at my front door. I'm living every day like a hustle. Another drug to juggle. Another day, another struggle.
It's much darker fare than a lot of people expected. There's a criminal element. You hear about mental illness, suicidal thoughts. It really shows that at a young age, he was a very complex person.
By the time you get to suicidal thoughts and the character kills himself, which was a huge kind of shock to anybody listening to the record. You're like, whoa.
Biggie, in terms of content, was the hardest thing I had ever worked with. They used to laugh at me. They used to make fun of me because, you know, every time I felt like Biggie might have been, like, going over the edge or pushing the envelope too far, I'd be like, yo, what's up, man? What's going on? Why would he? And they would be falling out on the chair over there laughing, cracking up. They'd be like, yo, Mo, chill, man. Why are you so sensitive? I was like, I didn't want the album to get pulled off shelves.
He was able to take very dark themes and oftentimes present them in such a palatable and even fun way.
Big was charming, you know? There's a way that he rhymes. He doesn't soften the content because, I mean, the record itself is pornographic. But it's just the way that he says it that you understand how he could talk anybody into anything.
It's like, get ready to go in the booth, and I'm going to do this interlude with me and Kim. Some of those kind of booths, they have, like, wood doors that will fold in and close so you can't see in. So he had the wooden doors folded in, and then the moaning started, and the... We was all in the control room, like, yo, what is going on in there?
Oreo cookie eating, pickle juice drinking, chicken gristle eating, V8 juice drinking, slim fast blended.
To this day, I don't know if it was real or not. All I know is I heard the sounds of ecstasy and.
One thing about hip-hop is it's very competitive. Since the beginning, it's always been about who's the best rapper, who's going to be the most popular, who's the one that all the girls like more. The East Coast-West Coast war of the 90s really surrounded Biggie on the East Coast and Tupac on the West Coast. When Ready to Die came out, though, a new king was crowned in the East. Now, we all kind of know the stories that after Tupac was shot at Quad Studios in New York City in 1994, he felt that Biggie was behind it, and that kind of started the snowball effect of the back and forth between the two MCs.
Shortly after midnight, 12:25 a.m. on Wednesday morning, Tupac Shakur was shot 5 times in the lobby of this Manhattan building. Shakur is reported in serious but stable condition at Bellevue Hospital.
If there's any one song, in my opinion, on Ready to Die, that could have contributed to that East Coast, West Coast war thing, I'd say it would have to have been Who Shot You?
Who shot ya? Separate the weak from the opsa. Leap hard to creep them Brooklyn streets. It's on. All that bickering beef. I can hear sweat trickling down your cheek. Your heartbeat sound like...
At the time, Big claims that it was a lyric that was already written. But it's just so coincidental at that time. Tupac gets shot. Oh, my goodness.
Sometimes people now say, yeah, when Big passed. Big didn't pass. He didn't have cancer. He didn't die in a skiing accident. He was murdered.
It's like a sad, numbing refrain heard too often. Another gangster rapper gunned down. This time, 24-year-old Notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, killed in an apparent drive-by shooting outside a Los Angeles party early Sunday.
Same thing with Tupac. You know, it isn't even like a plane crash like, you know, that killed Richie Valens and the Big Bopper. These two giants were taken from us.
I was just like, what happened? It was never the same.
Despite the fact that there's kind of been like a whole cottage industry of books and movies and things that have gotten so deep into their murders and, you know, it kind of becomes almost like the JFK Dealey Plaza of hip hop. Sometimes people have really forgotten why we loved them and loved their music in the first place.
Live from Bedford Stuyvesant, the loudest one, representing BK to the fullest. X, I pull it.
Big took his community with him. I mean, he was always shouting out Brooklyn. He was always shouting out Bed-Stuy. And those people that were closest to him, you know, basically went along for the ride. And he was showing them a different way other than selling drugs, other than death. But there are times when I just feel like, would he still be alive if he actually sold drugs instead of rapping about a lifestyle that he left behind?
I don't care what nobody say. Biggie is one of the greatest, I can't even say rappers, I'll say MCs that ever lived.
The stuff that Biggie's talking about, the heartbreak, the despair, really questioning the meaning of life as a young 20-something, those are the same things people are going through today. And he was able to put it in a way that's timeless. And I think that's the reason why this album is such an undisputed classic.
It's a timeless piece as far as I'm concerned. I put it up there with some of the greatest hip-hop albums of all time. And I'm so grateful to be able to say that I was a part of
that. Was the DJ and music producer Easy Mo B talking about Ready to Die, the album by the Notorious B.I.G. that was released this week back in 1994. We also heard from Cheo Hodari Coker and Somia Krishnamurthy. That piece was produced by Jenny Cataldo for BMP Audio.